the Bonkers Brit, and this week I have a really good friend of mine, Mindy Erlab, as my guest. Hi, Mindy.
Claire, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm so pleased that you're on my podcast.
I'm pleased to be here.
So Mindy is one of my friends that I've met since I've been over in America. We both live in Marin, and we are Right On Mamas, aren't we?
We are.
It's changed over the years. Right On Mamas is a writing group that I co-founded. Were you one of the co-founders? I can't remember, Mindy.
I was one of the original members of the Writing Mothers Mamas group, and we sort of morphed into, you know, a collective.
So Right On Mamas has been one of the things that was being really important to me, and it helped me write my book, and it helped me keep going. It helped me maybe think I was actually a writer.
Well, you are actually a writer.
Yes, but I'm not a published writer like you are now. We're going to come to this. So Mindy's got a book. Before I get into Mindy's book, which is being published on October the 30th, and we're going to come to that soon, I just want to go through a little bit of Mindy's bio. So you used to be a film producer, didn't you?
I did.
And you wrote and produced a feature-length film called Stalled.
So yes, I did.
I've not seen that. So can anybody see that anywhere?
I certainly hope not, but...
Are you not happy with it then?
Well, the only excuse I will make for it is that I was 20 when I wrote it and that it was loosely based on my experiences playing music in my teens and early 20s.
Right. So anyway, it was quite an achievement to actually make a film, right? Even if it's crap. Or that you're not saying it's crap, but if you're not that proud of it. But you used to, and I don't know whether you still do, but you used to play in a band. You're a proper rock star, aren't you?
I was in a former life a rock star.
So tell us the name of your band.
The name of the band was 40th Day, and we were based in Denver, Colorado. And it was, you know, a lot of kids joined sororities and fraternities when they got to college, and I joined a band.
And what type of music was it?
It was sort of a little bit post new wave, semi-alt, semi-grunge, you know, early alt music, I guess is the best way of saying it.
Right.
And, you know, grungy, distorted music with words and female vocals is pretty rare, actually. It doesn't happen that much. Usually you have grunge bands that are just dudes and guitars.
And so were you the only female member in the band?
No, our lead singer, Sean, is female, and she's operatically trained, believe it or not.
Wow.
So she's got this amazing voice and, you know, makes the rest of us look silly.
So, and what did you play? You played keyboards, didn't you?
I played keyboards and sang backing vocals, but, you know, the band was sort of a democracy and we all wrote our own music. And, you know, so we were all responsible for our own parts and responsible for different parts of the arrangement, which was pretty fun, actually.
And you did touring with proper bands, didn't you?
I did, yes. We played with Kansas on their 20-year reunion tour.
Wow.
And, you know, played big, you know, arenas and just huge events.
And the Smashing Pumpkins as well, who I actually really like. I don't
know
Kansas, actually, but I do know Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, we did. We opened for Smashing Pumpkins in Denver and a bunch of other cool bands. So it was actually a thing.
Cool.
We had a little following and everything and put out a couple of albums and yeah.
And what happened then? Why did you not carry on?
We did not carry on because, like all bands, we spontaneously combusted. No, we just, you know, one by one, everybody just sort of, I guess, outgrew it.
Yeah.
I think I was the only member who never quit, so technically I still play in the band even though no one else does.
But didn't you have a reunion not too long ago?
We did. We've actually played maybe in the last 5 years, we've maybe played 5 shows, which is, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
And my ears are still ringing from the last show, which was about 3 years ago.
Fab. But mind you, it's, you know, not a good business to be in at the moment, is it, with the pandemic?
I don't know. I feel like with the pandemic, actually, this is a really good time to be a creative person. You know, lots of bands are doing cool things from home and writers obviously work from home. And it just seems like if you're going to have a stay-at-home job, being a writer or a creative person or an artist or whatever, it's just, it's a good time for that.
Oh, no, no, I totally agree with that. But it's just that it's not good for live events, though, is it?
That's true.
Like going to live music events were Mark and I, that was our thing. You know, we love going to live music. And so it's a bit disappointing that we can't now. Although spending a shit ton of money, I have to say.
Well, there are bands that are meeting in studios, you know, where they can see each other through the plexiglass and they're playing live shows, which is just so cool. So,
I know we've just been asked to produce a show with a 10-piece band in Chicago. So, and how to do that sort of virtually. So that's quite cool.
Wow.
But yeah.
That is ambitious.
I know, we're still working on that one. More to come. So I want to get back now to your book. Oh no, actually, before we come to the book, I lie. What I want to do is just find out a bit more about you. And what I like to do on my podcast is ask people, what is it about you that not many people know and that is possibly slightly embarrassing or slightly odd or slightly quirky? And you've got some interesting ones, haven't you?
I do. Like a lot of people, I love to do crossword puzzles. A good Sunday morning consists of a crossword puzzle.
My worst nightmare, just telling you. Not
oh, really? you know, strong cup of coffee and me just sort of filling out little squares. I'm not very good yet. I sort of took after my mother. When she passed away, I picked up the gauntlet, picked up the pencil, and decided to start. And I've gotten my Tuesday and Wednesday books done for the New York Times crossword puzzles, but I'm looking forward to working my way up to Sunday and in pen.
Is Sunday the hard one then?
Sunday, yeah, it's brutal. So,
excuse me to do that. I can't understand why anybody would want to do a bloody crossword puzzle, but I know that so many people do.
It's good for writing.
Yeah, I've heard it's really good for you and good for your brain and too lazy.
Yeah. And it's
a nice novel.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a pretty common one. I also, for somebody who can find my way through a crossword puzzle, I have a terrible sense of direction, physical direction, and I can't really read a map. It isn't that I have a learning disability. I just do much better with words. And so if I have like directions written out on a piece of paper or street names written out, I'm fine. But like I can't use a nav system or a Google Maps or anything. And I just am terrible when I'm driving.
God, I do.
Yes.
I love it. I love Google Maps and all the navigation stuff. But then I used to do treasure hunts and car rallies when I was in England. And I used to have to set the map and read little Ordnance Survey maps as I was driving by myself and try and set it up and go down little tiny weeny roads and set it and do all this complicated stuff. So I got to read a map really well. And actually, they're really beautiful, actually, maps sometimes. I like them.
I have the worst sense of direction this side of the Mississippi, and I don't even know what side of the Mississippi I'm on.
I can't do the north, south, east, west. Well, I can do north and south. I just can't do east and west and things. I always get those muddled up. And I never know actually which way. I think I'm going south and I'm actually not going east or something. I don't know that very well.
There you go. See? So I guess the weirdest thing about me is that I have a sweet tooth. I love chocolate, vanilla, nuts, all that. But when it comes to fruit, I really have a problem with fruit that's been cooked, like squishy fruit, like squishy in a fruit. Pie or in a crumble or in a
tart. Did you not like apple crumble? It's my favorite.
No, God, no.
Apple and blackberry crumble is the best.
Horrible.
You are funny.
Anyway, so those are some personal things about me. And so, I've got lots of funny stories to tell too, but we'll get to that later.
I'm going to get to your funny stories as well. So let's go to slightly more serious. So you have got this fabulous book coming out on October the 30th, and you're going to have a book launch, and I'm going to help you with a book launch. So we'll talk about that. Your book is quite an unusual book. It's not what most people, it's a novel, but I want you to tell us all about it. You have traveled with Human Rights Watch and Eve Ensler's V-Day to the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So that's what your book's about. It's about the Congo, isn't it? Sorry, about Congo. I'm not very good at saying whether it's the Congo or Congo. So rather than me stumble my way through it, why don't you tell us what the book's about?
Well, thanks for asking. The book is about a family that is separated by a terrible event. It's an attack by a militia group on their village in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And the two main characters, Therese and Luna, daughter and mother, are separated. And Therese, as far as she knows, is the only surviving member of her family. And she makes it a mission to find her family. She has lost her father. She knows her brother is out there somewhere, and she knows her mother is out there somewhere. And the story is about how she navigates her way through women's shelters and hospitals, and one by one looks for family members. You know, she's 11 years old. I should mention that. And this is a coming of age story. So she's sort of encountering her first love during this harrowing adventure. And she falls in love during this time. She goes through high school and ultimately is becoming a writer and a filmmaker in the process. And so that's what it's about. And during this time, her mother is going through a similar challenge. She's trying to find her family members, but the two of them have been sort of pulled apart, and they're both being taken advantage of by an evil general and his henchman, who wears a necklace of human teeth. So anyway, that's what the story is about. And it's a story about women, about girls, and about the resilience of women in Congo. But mostly it's about family, and it's about bravery, and about what matters most, you know, which is loving people and being able to find your true love and your true self, even when things are difficult.
Wow. That's quite a lot to have in the book, isn't it? You've got, which is notoriously difficult to get, a really good review from Publishers Weekly. And at the end they said, Olub's harrowing novel doesn't spare readers the grim reality of children harmed by sadists. Readers who like their fiction with a conscience will want to take a look. And it's a searing debut. So, I mean, that's amazing praise from them, really, and an endorsement of your book. So you must have been thrilled to get that, weren't you?
I was very excited by that. And I was kind of shocked. I guess, you know, when you take 10 years to write a book, you really are surprised when somebody notices it.
Yes, I know.
Especially somebody like Publishers Weekly.
Yeah. So it's quite a difficult subject. So tell us how you came to even think about writing this story. Because it's a really interesting way that you came to do that, isn't it?
Back in the early 2000s, my cousin gave me a book called King Leopold's Ghost. And it's written by Adam Hochschild, who is a very important humanitarian and author. He's also the founder of Mother Jones Magazine. And this book, I can't say enough about it, but it basically is the history of the Belgian Congo under King Leopold. And it got me thinking about Congo. It got me thinking about slavery and about the way that white people have been taking advantage of Africans for a very long time. And that, I don't know, just made me think. It made me think about what's going on there now, I guess is the best way of saying it. And I
now comes to light a bit more in our country, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually this is way before Black Lives Matter even became a thing. I mean, it's obviously always been a thing, but it got me thinking about slavery. And I did a little bit of research about Congo right around that time. My dad and his wife were making a donation to Human Rights Watch, and I was telling them about this great book that I had read, and my dad had said something like, well, I think they have an office in Congo at Human Rights Watch. And I was like, well, they do. And so I looked up the Human Rights Watch website and I made a donation to their Congo office, their office in Goma. And right around that time, somebody who lived right in my town was the person who was putting together their annual fundraising dinner. And he reached out to me and basically said, hey, did you know that we have this office in Congo and that we're going to be running a trip for donors? Are you interested in going?
Wow.
And I kind of went, well, from everything I've read, Congo is a war zone and it's the rape capital of the world. So where do I sign up? So I was just curious. I mean, you know, what was really interesting, he actually said to me, there's nothing like a site visit for people to actually understand, you know. And right around that time, my kids were quite young at the time. They were probably, I don't know, this was maybe 2010 or so. So my kids were like 7 and 5 or something at the time. My husband was working in an adventure travel company, and he'd be away for 3 weeks at a time, and he'd be going to places like Nepal and India. And we basically had this sort of uneasy agreement that if he was going to go away for a couple weeks at a time and leave me with two kids who had either colic or, you know, the flu or whatever they were going to have, that, you know, I got to go away every once in a while too. So I said, what do you think about me going to Congo? And he went,
he probably thought you meant Spain or Mexico, not bloody Congo. Corn rape capital of the world. I mean, love this. Yes.
And so, I don't know, right around that time, he basically said, you know, he was very supportive of the idea. And he said, you know, if you're really feeling passionately about this and you really want to research this, just do it safely. I went to, how did this happen? I can't even remember the chronology, but the same cousin who put King Leopold's ghost in my hand introduced me to Adam Hochschild, who lives in the Bay Area. And we started talking about Congo. And he said, you know, do you know that Eve Ensler has a women's shelter that she's opening in Congo? And I was like, do you mean the Vagina Monologues, Eve Ensler? And he said, yeah. So of course I went online and I did my research on Eve Ensler in Congo. And sure enough, she was opening a women's shelter. And a lot of the same people who were interested in Human Rights Watch, who were thinking of going to Congo, were also thinking of going to the opening of City of Joy, which is in Bukavu, DRC. And so I got on an airplane and I went with Human Rights Watch and V-Day to the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And I got to meet lots of really, really strong people and really got to see a lot of beautiful places. And I got to hear about, you know, the history of Congo and also about how it became the rape capital of the world and about the destruction of natural resources and about the white people and how they've sort of moved into the, you know, the area and opened mines and foreign interests taking over the forest. And I mean, just, I learned about all kinds of things from child soldiers to the use of charcoal in cook fires. And I really wanted to, I met a lot of people on that trip. And I did meet one woman who had been dragged through the forest by a militia member. And she had been tortured and tied to a tree and raped. And she basically said to me, I'm happy to tell you my story so you understand, but you're going to cry your white person's tears and you're going to go home and you're going to forget about me.
Wow.
That is how I wrote this book, because I didn't forget. And not only did I not forget, but I actually went back a couple of years later to see how people were doing. And Eve's, you know, the City of Joy shelter in Bukavu is just a beacon of hope in a really terrible place to be a woman.
So explain what her center is and what's it do?
Basically what they do is they help women recover from rape, from torture, and from displacement. It's not so much a medical center as it is the sort of step after they've received medical treatment, because rape is quite stigmatized in Congo, in a lot of parts of Africa. It's that way that once you've been violated by somebody else, a lot of families won't take people back. A lot of people don't want to help women raise babies that are rape babies. A lot of, you know, this is, it's just very tough. It's not just.
So why is it that the rape capital of the world? You said you found out why it was.
It's an unstable part of the world. You know, there was a civil war that happened in Rwanda, and refugees poured over the border, and the country has been destabilized by foreign interests and by corruption, and it's just a very vulnerable place. And there are, you know, armed thugs that walk the neighborhoods and take people. I mean, it's unbelievable. People are kidnapped there every day. It's just a terrifying place for people to have to live. And yet, you know, people are very resilient, and they have, you know, you hear them sing, you see them dance, you hear them be hopeful for the future. When Nyiragongo explodes and a volcano pours lava all over your town, you have no choice but to run and then come back and rebuild. And that's just what they do. They're just incredible people. And
but some of the stories, those poor women and girls who get raped through, obviously, you know, fault of their own, and then they're stigmatized. And I mean, it's so unfair sometimes, isn't it, life? I mean, it's just, how can that be? I don't know. Your heart goes out to them, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I digressed a little bit, but, you know, City of Joy is a totally independent place that has, well, it's not completely independent, because it actually helped, you know, with the help of Pansy Hospital and UNICEF and all of the donors and all of the women who have built this place by hand. This has become a center where girls and women can learn everything from computer skills to martial arts to therapy and, you know, farming. They have a farm where they, you know, it's a completely sustainable farm where they raise tilapia and pigs and fruits and vegetables, and they just
how fabulous.
I would encourage anybody to check out V-Day online. V-Day, yes. And so, you know, these organizations that just exist for people there, the Human Rights Watch offices in Africa are amazing. They work with grassroots organizations to rehabilitate child soldiers, and they work on women's issues there. I could just go on forever about how incredible they are and how they advocate for people. You know, they really are the boots on the ground there, and they're reporting about all the atrocities, which it just has to be such a hard job to have to
Horrible.
See.
Awful. So yeah. Once you see stuff, you can't unsee it, can you? So tell me, when you arrived in Congo, I mean, did it feel dangerous to you? Did you feel in under threat at any time, or did you feel okay because you were with, you know, obviously the Human Rights Watch?
Well, I mean, we always had people with us, like a private security team with us. Even then, you know, if you were driving in the middle of Goma and you didn't have your doors locked, I mean, we definitely had someone jump into our car and try to grab a camera away from somebody. Like I had never seen anything like it in the US. I mean, you just don't go through that where you're just driving somewhere and someone jumps into your car and grabs something, but they did. And this, people are desperate there. They're very, very poor, and some people don't have the resources, and so they resort to these kinds of things. But in general, I felt very safe. I did have on my second trip there, I was in Virunga National Park, which is where the gorillas and the mist are. And I was hosted by Emmanuel Demerode, who's the who runs Virunga National Park. And
wow, Mindy, that must have been quite an experience.
It was incredible. We walked into the jungle and up a mountain and got to see the Highland gorillas. And
oh, how lovely. God.
You know, it was
good stuff,
it was,
as well as bad stuff happened then.
I'm sorry?
There was good stuff as well as all the bad stuff.
Oh, it was incredible. And I sprained my knee on the hike, and I had to walk down off the mountain in the dark. And, you know, in the dark in Virunga National Park, there are poachers and there are militia groups. And it was really scary. That experience of having to walk in the dark through militia territory really informed my book. That kind of terror that you feel. I mean, if you're hiking here in Marin and the sun goes down, you might see an owl or something.
Your coyote.
You might see a coyote who would be scared of you, but you're not going to run into somebody carrying an AK-47. So I was very, very fortunate to be with a security team, with rangers, Virunga rangers, who kept me safe, and with Human Rights Watch researchers who knew their way around. And, you know, it really put things, it made it very clear to me that people there have to feel, they feel like that all the time, and they don't have the privilege of getting on an airplane and getting an MRI of their knee, or having help getting off the mountain and staying in a warm bed. I mean, these are people who get dragged from their villages and taken from their families. And this happens every day, and it's appalling. So.
And is it still going on? Is it still as terrible?
Yes. There's a recent Human Rights Watch report from July about kidnapping. And
it's so awful, isn't it?
It's awful, and it does make you think, standing there watching your kids play on the playground or whatever, like it just makes you feel very small in the face of all of that, and that anything you do is just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
You know, but it's appalling enough that I just couldn't go and forget about it. So anyway,
that's the basis of your book, isn't it? Your visits and what you saw and experienced, and you leapfrog from there, didn't you?
Yeah, and there are amazing people that are doing amazing things, and your eyes glass over when you hear, you know, statistics like 500,000 girls under the age of, you know, X are raped in X time. Like, it's just numbers. It's just numbers. But when you get to know somebody, you get to know their backstory, and you get to really sympathize with them, and you put yourself in their position, reading about them, you start pulling for them and you start caring. That's what I wanted other people to feel. I wanted them to care about these. I wanted them to care about people.
Yeah. So the girl that you saw that had been tortured and raped and said, go and cry your white woman tears and then forget about us, have you kept in contact with her, or was that not possible to do?
I don't want to say too much about that. I was in contact with her. She did not live very long after that.
Oh,
and so
sorry.
I don't want to mention names or anything, because I don't want to endanger family members.
No, of course not.
But I think about her every day.
Gosh. Oh, it's so tragic, isn't it? What some people have to go through, and then we think, oh, we've got to wear a sodding mask. How terrible, you know.
It's unreal, isn't it?
I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yes. But, you know, it's a very, that kind of book is a really tough sell for a lot of people. A lot of people were very leery of it, particularly agents. It's not what you would consider to be, you know, it's not a light read.
No, but not, you can say, though, that before we get onto some of your agent stories, it actually has a bit of an optimistic, positive end, doesn't it?
It does.
Not all doom and gloom, is it?
And actually, it's a story of redemption. So it's a story of survival, and it's the story of a girl who becomes a leader, you know. And so this girl ends up being the hero of the book, and. So
without giving out stuff, but I'm glad it's got a positive ending, because
it does, and it has lots of funny parts too. But
so tell us, so to actually get this published, I mean, to get any book published anywhere, no matter what it is hard work, unless you're Stephen King or something. So for us mere mortals who are just starting out, and because I've taken 10 years to write my book, and I'm just about to go out to agents, and I know from you and other Write On Mamas who've paved the way for me, that we have this saying that we 100 rejections, which means you have to write to all these different agents or publishers, and don't worry and don't take it personally for at least, and keep going till you've got 100 rejections. And you were one of those people who've paved that way for me.
Oh, thank you. I'm so sorry.
It's not a good thing, is it, really? It shows our perseverance in our own little way.
Poor thing.
Yes, I'm just starting out. Damn it.
No, I have to say that. So everybody that I know who is a writer, who's what I would consider to be a serious writer, has what's called a query tracker. This is a spreadsheet. And it has all of the people that you're going to query. And so I am a technophobe, I will admit that.
Yes, well, I can't believe you even know what that is, Mindy.
I do, and I can spell it too because I do crossword puzzles. But you know, the idea is that you get 100 rejections. Here's the thing they don't tell you about rejections. 3/4 of the agents that you query will not respond to you at all.
And that doesn't count as a rejection, then, or does it? Would you count?
No.
So a rejection has to actually be no. I didn't like it. I don't want it.
It has to be no.
Oh, I thought that the rejections were going to be, because I've queried 2 agents now, and it's been virtually crickets from both of them. So I was counting that as 2 rejections, but that's not.
No, that is not a rejection. That goes into the outstanding category. Damn. So I actually probably queried between 200 and 300 agents.
Oh, you're joking.
And I never got 100 rejections. In fact, not only did I not get 100 rejections, I had about 50 requests for the entire manuscript. And even some of those people who read the entire manuscript, who said they were interested, didn't get back to me.
And so, how awful was that?
Basically, it's not awful. I mean, you get to a point where it's just like, you know, you develop a thick skin. Don't quote me on that, because when the reviews of my book come out, somebody says it sucks, I'll probably, like, you know, melt into a little puddle. But the reality is that, think about all the books that you've read. And if you put them, you know, you categorize them A through F, most of them are like C+, you know? And, you know, if you read 100 books and you really love 1 or 2, that's about the same amount that an agent is going to love your book, you know, same amount of writers that an agent.
That's true, actually.
Yeah. So
you've had some quite interesting, which I want you to talk about, experiences with getting really close to, like, really amazing agents in New York and stuff like that. So I'm really, I don't know whether you want to tell a funny story now or later, but you've got a very funny story about an agent in New York, haven't you?
Yes, I've actually had.
It's been a little bit sad listening to you, I have to say, and good. I mean, we need to be.
Well,
aware.
Okay.
But tell us the funny story about New York.
So here's a happy. It's a happy story, actually, just because it brings a smile to my face. But there was a day when I was given the name of an A-list agent whose name shall remain, I'll keep it to myself. Okay, so.
Don't name and shame.
She's quite famous, and her family members are quite famous. So we'll just leave it at that. A friend gave me her contact info, and I sent her my manuscript. And the very famous family member wrote a 7-page book report on my book and talked about how much she loved it. That it's you know, she compared it to, you know, Unbroken and books like this. You know, she liked it, and she said it just reminded her of, you know, What Is the What or something like that. She couldn't believe that it was fiction because the voice sounded so realistic. She just kind of went on about the book and how much she loved it. And then I followed up and thanked her for the wonderful report and asked if, you know, her famous family member would like to meet with me and discuss the book. So I was very shocked and delighted to receive not only an email, but a phone call from the offices of said agent. And she said to me, "Can you meet her for lunch?" And I'm looking at this query tracker. And back then, this was maybe 4 years ago. So there are probably, I don't know, 40 or 50 agents who I had already gotten rejected from. And I was pretty tired. I had, you know, querier's fatigue or whatever you call it. And I said, sure, I can meet for lunch. And then I, you know, looked at the masthead or looked at the email again as I was talking to her on the phone, and I realized that she was in New York and I was in California. While I was on the phone with this assistant, I was looking for cheap flights on American Airlines or whatever.
Don't you find that so arrogant? Is that, can you meet me for lunch no matter where you are in the country?
Yeah, can you meet me?
Is it possible for you to meet me for lunch? But just, would you like to meet for lunch?
Yeah, and this, now remember, this is pre-pandemic, so there was no Zoom or anything. There was, I mean, there was Skype, but who would Skype with an agent? You'd go and meet him for lunch, right? And so this agent, assuming I was in New York, just said, let's meet at the X restaurant and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I'm in San Francisco. I could be there next week, but I'm happy to do it if she's serious, you know? And I think I use those words, if she's serious. And so I did it. I got on an airplane and I flew to New York, you know, took a red eye. I checked into a hotel. I actually went shopping with a girlfriend to buy the perfect outfit and everything. Like I was serious about it. I even bought a briefcase. You know, I didn't have a briefcase before, but I bought a briefcase.
You are fine.
And, you know, wore my best creepers and, you know, these slacks that I sort of dug out from when I was like, I don't know, 20 or something, because I didn't have a proper pair of slacks. And so I was like, had this really nice shirt and these old slacks, and it actually looked pretty slamming if you ask me. But I couldn't sleep the night before. The truth is I was perimenopausal, so I wasn't sleeping. So I was kind of pacing around my room and sweating and doing all the things you do when you're perimenopausal. And I, you know, jammed my pants on and got there, you know, 15 minutes before the meeting. And I'm like walking up the stairs. There are these steep stairs on the way up to this restaurant, and I'm walking in, and on the last stair, my old pants rip completely up the middle. Like when I say the middle, I mean like the middle seam from like crotch to like the top of my butt crack, like the entire thing, like, you know, like a trap drawer opens, you know, like it was like a trap door pants situation. And I was wearing a long shirt, thank God. But what was really weird about it is that I didn't quite know. Well, I was like verklempt. I mean, what else do you do? Like, what do you do when you're going to meet a big high stakes agent? So I like sat down really quickly in the front hall where they had a little waiting area. And I was kind of looking out the window trying to, you know, contemplating like, okay, I've untucked my shirt. I get this, you know, she doesn't have to see the back of me, you know, like I can just, everyone else can see it. As long as she doesn't see it, it's okay. And I'm sitting there and the weirdest thing happens. There's a double decker bus driving by. And no kidding, there are about 30 people on the top deck, and they are all dressed as the abominable snowman. And what? I'm looking out the window and I'm facing them. My cold ass is stuck to the chair, and I'm looking at these people and they're waving at me through the window. And I'm like, this is an absolutely surreal situation. I have just flown all the way across the country to split my pants, sit here in this restaurant and wait for this agent who is running late. So anyway, it was just a crazy moment. Oh, and funny. She walked in, she had these gigantic glasses, and thank God I was facing her. The first thing she did was she put her arms out and she said, thank you for writing such a powerful novel.
Wow.
And she hugged me. And of course I was just praying that she wasn't going to like pat me on the bottom at the time. And you know, I followed her, you know, feeling quite a lot like, you know, the cowardly lion in the Wizard of Oz who has his tail sticking out of the back of that jacket. But you know, this was a little different. So we sat down to lunch, much to my delight. And she told me about how much she loved the book. And she said, you know, she'd be in contact with me. And I was like, well, I can rewrite, you know, if you want, I can. I just didn't have an in me to actually say like, so do we have a deal or what, you know? Because I felt, I don't know, I guess I was a little off my game that day. I guess possibly anyone.
A little bit intimidating.
Wouldn't be.
And having your bottom hanging out.
Yes. And so the whole thing I'm thinking is, I hope she gets up and walks out before I do. And she bought me lunch, which was nice, even though I just spent a couple $100 on a hotel and a flight and half of a new outfit.
Wrong half, obviously.
The wrong half. And I got home and I was like, you know, I had been taking notes and I was like, she loved it. You know, her family member wrote a great, you know, report of it. How could she possibly pass? You know, and I emailed her, actually sent her her favorite kind of chocolate. I asked her assistant what her favorite kind of chocolate was. And I sent a box of chocolates to, you know, to thank her for the lovely lunch. And, you know, I paced around my house for like a week waiting to hear from her. And finally said, thank you again. I hope you received the chocolates. I hope you enjoyed it. You know, it was really lovely meeting you. And I really enjoyed, you know, all of the things that your Phil and the family member wrote about my book. I was wondering if you might be interested in representing me. And she instantly got back to me with an email that said, sorry, I'm not taking on any new clients.
No. How bizarre. Why would she ask you to meet you for lunch in New York, knowing you lived in San Francisco, to then say, sorry, I'm not taking on any new clients?
Maybe she just wanted a good look at my butt.
But you know, having her family member and her both really love your book, think it's very important, and just say, I'm not taking on. I mean, she could have said, I think it's a great book, it's really wonderful, but it's not right for me at the moment, or anything like that, or I'm going to recommend you to so-and-so, or why don't you see so-and-so, they'd be better fit, anything, but I'm not taking on new clients. Is how rude is that?
Well, it's rude, but I got to see the bus full of Yetis.
Yes, well, there you go then. Always a silver lining, eh? But yeah, that's amazing. That's such a funny story.
Yeah, so these are the kinds of things we do for our book.
Yeah.
You know, we go to writer's residencies where we don't get along with our roommate, you know, we go to...
And you have a bad time.
No, I mean, actually I didn't. I'm just saying that we as sort of the global writing, we travel to the depths of Africa, we fly across the country and rip our pants open for people and all kinds of things, but... I think the bottom line is, so to speak, the bottom line is that you don't ever give up. That gritty determination is what you need to actually get your book out there. And ultimately, it never really occurred to me to query publishers. And the second I gave up the idea of querying agents, I had a lot of interest from publishers. I actually had interest from a couple different publishers. And I ultimately found the right place for my book without even needing an agent.
Mindy, I don't think I knew that. So you've gone straight to the publisher and cut out the middleman.
I did.
And tell us who your publisher is.
The publisher is The Permanent Press. They've been around forever. They're out of New York. It's literally a ma and pa operation. A couple, Judith and Martin Shepherd, own it, and they've owned it for many, many years. And they put out several books a year, and yeah, they've been pretty good to me. They've been very attentive, and they gave my book a home when, you know, no agent would touch it.
So looking forward to the time when it's an absolutely runaway bestseller, and then you can stick two fingers up to all those agents and didn't take any notice, particularly that one.
Well, I might invite them to my book launch, but I'll wait until afterwards to stick my fingers up.
Yes. Let's make sure it is a success first.
Yes, exactly.
Mindy.
Yeah, so everybody has a funny agent story, but I do think that the idea is that, like, there's a place, just like there's somebody for everyone, there's a home for every book. There really is, even if it's in your drawer, you know?
I'm hoping mine can go a little bit further than my drawer. I'm glad yours has gone a lot further than your drawer.
Yeah, I know
there were times, weren't you, when you just said, I'm giving up, I'm not doing it. And you would put it down for a bit, wouldn't you, before you brought it up again?
Very rarely. There was a time when, you know, my husband was sick and I had to really pay attention to him. And it was really hard to keep on with querying and trying to find a home for the book during that.
You've had a bit of a tough time recently, haven't you?
Yes, it's not been an easy couple of years. And the truth is that it's a hard world to live in right now, right? With pandemics and fires and the political situation being what it is. But
it's really tough, isn't it? I think it is too. I mean, it's the weirdest, toughest year I've ever lived through. Although I've been able to be very creative, so I've loved it. But it's so horrible seeing so many people go through such a tough time and so much hatred and division and nobody seeing each other's side. It's horrific to see that around the world, isn't it?
It's hard, but actually, even the weirdest it's gotten in the last couple of weeks, it doesn't even compare to what was going on in my house a couple of years ago. With my husband had a very serious cancer and was going through chemotherapy at the same time as my mom was dying of ALS.
Awful.
It was just a very tough time to have several first order relatives that were in a life-threatening situation while trying to write a book about people who are in life-threatening situations and trying to market it and sell it and get interest in it. And really, being home right now and being with my healthy husband and knowing that my mother isn't suffering anymore, it makes things like COVID easier to handle. It makes things like the fires easier to handle because I know that I can do it. It all goes back to the fierce determination and I hope that kind of thing comes through in the book too, that it's all about just not giving up, whether it's querying people or seeing yourself through this pandemic or whatever, fill in the blank, right? Like whatever it is.
So what do you think got you through it? How did you find that inner strength or did you just have to, because you didn't have a bloody choice, you just have to do it one day at a time?
That, and to try to be able to laugh at myself when my pants split open and when I get lost.
Not too, isn't it? With a busload of abominable snowmans going past.
Yes. It is, I think that having wonderful supportive communities like the Write On Mamas, like good friends.
It is very supportive, actually. Strong women who just, it's so supportive. Even now when we don't meet like we used to, an email goes out and everybody just comes out and supports, and it's lovely.
I know. It is, it's great. I mean, having good friends and remembering what's really important, which is the people that you love. That's what's ultimately, it's all about relationships, isn't it? So
nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's what got me through my hard times. That and, okay, a little bit of Lexapro doesn't hurt either, but, and a lot of exercise, and the occasional chocolate, that helps.
Compulsory, I found. A little bit too much compulsory during this time of COVID.
No kidding.
COVID-19.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm so happy that your husband has recovered, and long may that last. And I'm sorry about your mum, but people, it's better not for them to be suffering, isn't it?
It's true. It's true.
Tell us a little bit about, with your book, how can people buy it? When was it happening? Tell us a little bit about the book launch, and then that'll probably be time to wrap up.
Okay, so the book launch, I'll tell all the locals about it first, which is it's going to be from 6 to 8 at Deer Park Villa, and I will be sending out some invitations.
And is it going to be an in-person book launch, which is so exciting? How are you managing that?
It's going to be 6 feet apart. Everybody's 6 feet apart, and we're going to do it. We're going to meet and we're going to celebrate.
And then 6 feet apart, my production company, we're going to be live streaming it through YouTube at the same time. So we'll be sending out. Keep looking out on 6 feet apart, because we'll have that coming out very soon, and as well as Mindy. So your website is mindyerlab.com. I'm not very good at saying names, so say it properly and expel it to us.
mindyerlab.com. mindyerlab.com.
So that's a difficult last name, let me tell you. I always get the R and the H the wrong way. I don't know why, but
that's okay.
U-H-R.
Yes, UHR.
And the book is called Unnatural Resources.
That is correct. It's coming out on October 30th from Permanent Press.
So exciting. So exciting. And so anything else, Mindy, you want to say before we wrap up?
Geez, I don't know. I kind of want to just make sure you don't give up on those queries after I just said that. You know, I'm going to hold you to it.
Just start here. I'm manifesting I don't have to do that, that someone just go, oh my God, Clay, it's amazing. We must have it and have the film rights, and there I am, and then George Clooney and Brad Pitt, and I can go and stroke them. So that's my thing, my little vision, and I'm going to manifest it. I decided manifesting might be easier than querying. But at the moment, I'm just stuck on the book proposal side. The book proposal is just hideous. I can't seem to do that.
So I want to know who's gonna play you.
I don't know. I haven't really thought about that. But I'll obviously have to think about that then to make it a reality. I don't know.
I like this idea. Good positive self-talk.
Yeah. I just thought, I can't be asked. I don't want to do a book proposal. I'll keep trying to write it. And then I keep doing something else because it's just hideously boring. So I'm hoping I just get an agent that says, no, we don't need to do that. I know someone's going to buy it straight away. I may be cuckoo land.
I think it's nice to dream.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, watch this space, eh? But anyway, the most exciting thing is you've actually got yours published. So thrilled.
Thank you.
Unnatural Resources, out on 30th of October. You can buy it on Amazon, but let's try and buy it from an independent bookstore who need it much more than Amazon do.
That's right.
And then if you want to come and see Mindy's actual, be there at the launch, either virtually or in person, it'll happen on October the 30th, which is a Friday. And you can look at it at Six Feet Apart Productions or on Mindy's website. It'll be everywhere very soon.
Woohoo!
All right, Mindy. Actually, by the time this comes out, it'll actually be almost on us, won't it? And it'll definitely, all the publicity will all be out there. So you'll definitely be able to see it.
Well, thank you so much for helping me plug my book and having me on.
And you've been a delight, Mindy, and all the very best for everything that goes on. And I can't wait to read your book.
Thank you.
All right, Mindy. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And I will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.